Howdy folks, it's the Creepy Kentuckian here with you from deadpit.com and deadpit on patreon.com. Podcast this week is a show we did back in February for our Patreon page. So this is a good chance to kind of plug deadpit on patreon.com. Each week we put up new old shows. In addition to exclusive contents, there is a weekly Dead Pit show. It is on Wednesdays. It is the Patreon MWO podcast. Check that out on there. All of the old Dead Pit radio shows, the MySpace shows. We've even got fan commentaries, Eurocult podcasts, old songs that we did. All that stuff is on deadpitonpatreon.com, as well as exclusive shows like the one that you're going to hear. Now, this is a video show on our Patreon page, but this is the podcast version, us covering A24 Studios, more particularly Ari Aster and Robert Eggers movies. So we'll be talking about that on the show. And I want to get right to it, but if you guys aren't patrons yet, please consider it. The tiers start at only $1 and go up from there, just depending on how much you want. Basically, all the podcast stuff is $5 a month. So we appreciate the support and enjoy the show.
All in the Dead Pit.
Patreon, our patron baller and shot caller monthly video that we do. And I got big news, Uncle Bill, before we get started here. We're doing A24 Showcase on this one, I guess is what we'll call it. Right. Talking about Ari Aster movies and the Robert, what was his name? Robert Eggers or something like that. Yeah, who recently did The Lighthouse, which, God, I haven't watched that, but that looks very fucking weird.
I actually did watch it, and it is very fucking weird. It's like as weird as you can imagine it is. Yeah.
But we're going to be talking about his first movie, The Witch, which I had never seen up until a couple of days ago. And so that's the ones we're going to be talking about this go around. But we did fill that second slot for the baller and shot caller tier for next go around. So we had one this guy this time, and he actually requested Midsommar or Hereditary. And I think Uncle Bill had never seen either one of those. So it's kind of, I think the request was for Uncle Bill to pretty much watch them and review one of them. But fuck it. We're going to review both of them.
That's right. That's how we do his shit.
Yeah. We don't fuck around. So, which one do you want to go
first? Here's the thing. Like, The Witch, I've seen the lot. Like, it's been a while since I saw The Witch. I remember everything about it because it's the type of movie that fucking sticks with you.
Right.
But the one that's freshest in my mind right now is probably Midsommar. So I guess we could talk about that one first.
It's whatever you want to do.
So I've heard all kinds of stuff, just to kind of preface this, I've heard all kinds of stuff about this guy and these movies, and didn't really know what to expect when I was getting into it. I just knew that, like, the movies were supposed to be uncomfortable, to say the least, and somewhat extreme. So, Midsommar, to kind of get into the plot of it, this is his second movie. It's the one that is the most recent, came out in 2019. And a lot of people, the only thing I ever heard about this movie was is that it was The Wicker Man, basically, or like a version of The Wicker Man. And I guess, like, you could see some similarities in that movie and this one, but other than the cult aspects of it and the fact that, you know, it takes place in the deserted kind of community with these people who are kind of off the beaten path, other than that kind of setup, the movie, the two movies are completely different, like, in the way that they go about things. But so it's a story of a woman whose sister dies, and in the process of the sister dying, like, the parents also die, and she has like a nervous breakdown basically, and she's falling around this boyfriend who doesn't really genuinely like her, but is staying with her because of the all the stuff that just happened to her. So she kind of invites herself to go on this trip to with him and this group of guys to this kind of Eastern European festival that they have.
Well, I think one of them, they're like college students in spring break or something, right?
Yeah.
And one of them is from this village. So,
yeah, that's a, well, yeah, that's a, I didn't
think that, about that. That comes right into play, you know, later on, but I, we probably won't give that away or anything, but.
So, yeah, they get there, and pretty much right off the bat, there's a scene, and I feel like that in order to really, like, talk about these movies, we kind of have to get into some of the shit that happens. So, you know, if this is something, if this is a movie you haven't seen yet, then I recommend you probably don't listen, because there'd be spoilers in it. But pretty much immediately when they get there, two of the elder people within the community kind of ritualistically commit suicide.
Yeah, they can only live to a certain age in that village, right? That's the, I can't remember what the age is. I'm thinking it's 70 like
something. I can't remember. Okay. Either, yeah. But yeah, once you get to that age, then they're explaining this, that they have all these kind of customs that aren't the same as, you know, people in America. And one of the customs is when they get to a certain age, then they just jump off a cliff. And then,
yeah.
And unfortunately you get to see that in full detail.
And it's even worse on you if you, not only you survive, but they make sure that you don't survive.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Makes it even worse.
But there are many more kind of customs that come into it that they don't understand. And I think that's where people draw the comparison to The Wicker Man, because it's the whole stranger in a strange land. They don't understand the customs, but that's really the only similarity, because in The Wicker Man, you've got a detective that's going there to try to solve a crime and runs into these people, and then eventually, like, yada, yada, yada. But in this one, they're just kind of on a vacation. And here's the thing, man. Like, to me, the biggest difference between this and The Wicker Man is that I'm not even sure that the people in this one, in the cult, really think that or even know that anything that they're doing is wrong. Mm-hmm. Where in The Wicker Man, you got the sense that Christopher Lee and the rest of them knew that they were tricking this guy, and what the purpose was, they kind of knew that whole scenario was wrong. And I don't get the feeling that they really did in this one, but, well, maybe they did, but who's to say? It's like Tom Atkins.
Yeah, Tom Atkins couldn't even say. yeah, I mean, this one, it it kind of had a small theatrical run, I think. I had heard from a couple of people that I couldn't imagine seeing this damn movie in the theater.
Well, for one thing, it's damn near like 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but for another thing, like, yeah.
Well, it's such a slow build, but at the same time, I mean, it is. My mother-in-law watched this, and she was captivated by it. She didn't want to turn it off. Yeah, did not want to turn it off. And I've said a couple of times, and this was a weird time. I watched it in the summer last year when I was working from home. Had some anxiety going on anyway because of that. But man, this movie gave me probably the closest I've ever had. A movie ever gave me a panic attack was this movie. And it wasn't, I don't think it was any particular scene that caused it, but it was just the atmosphere created in that. I'm not a fan of Yoda or Mennonite fucking people anyway. They creep me out. Their clothes.
Yoders.
Yeah, whoever. They freak me the fuck out anyway.
Oh, God.
And then you've got that damn music they were playing, and you know, the beautiful daylight scenery throughout the entire time, really, in the movie is daylight.
That's one of the weirder things about this movie too, is the fact that everything in it that's creepy as hell takes place basically in like this very vivid, oversaturated, you know, daylight. And I think that's what adds to it. That's the adds to the uncomfortableness of it anyway.
Yeah. And then the bones breaking, those people falling from, I don't like that either. Like I can watch people getting disemboweled like on, you know, but when it comes to bones breaking and stuff like that, that makes me sick. I'm not a fan of that either. So I think that was part of it as well. There's just a lot to it, really. And do you see what I was saying where like, it's not a movie that you would watch multiple times.
No.
You just go through so much while you're watching it. It's just, yeah, it's not one that you'll revisit a lot, or that I would at least.
No, because it's so, not only is it slow, but it's like unrelenting tension would probably be the way I would describe it.
Right.
Something's always going on that you know is leading to something bad. And the way that he directs it, it's just so drawn out, like everything. And when you see the kind of like what's going on in more detail too, that's more, that's drawn out. Like everything is drawn. There's one scene, man, I don't know why I cannot get this scene out of my head. And you probably know what the scene is, but there's a scene and I'm like,
does it involve the ginger girl?
Yes. And so, you know, I've seen scenes like this before. Because like we're like a bunch of older middle-aged people get naked. I'll give you a good example is the opening scene in what's the Rob Zombie movie? The witch one.
Oh yeah, the
Lords of Salem.
Lords of Salem.
Yeah, so there's a scene similar to that in that movie too. But there's a scene in this where, you know, the boyfriend and this chick who they're wanting to have a baby have like this ritualistic kind of sex scene. But the part that got me that I just want to claw my own eyes out is the part where like the old woman is back there, like pushing his ass. You just can't unsee stuff like that. Like,
how do you feel like, okay, for one thing, you would write this out in the story, right?
Yes.
And then what would the filming day be like for that? I just can't imagine that. That's just such a weird.
But I mean, I guess it makes sense in a weird way. Like if there was a cult and it was just that it was a ritual like that, everybody's trying to help out. They're singing songs to her and like trying to. Yeah, I don't know.
Did you notice in the movie too that there were, I guess it was visual effects that did this? Like certain like the flowers and stuff in the background would float around and move and just different. It was just really freaky. Like it almost felt like you were high on something watching it.
Yeah. And I was noticing that that effect was really, really noticeable. Like whenever they would go in somewhere, like all of the inner, I don't know what you, the set design was like these really bright reddish, yellowish, kind of bluish tones. And it almost looked like those things where you look at them and they look like they're spinning all the time.
Right.
And very, very reminiscent. I was talking about this before of like Argento, like all of his inside interior stuff, the way that it was lit and the way that it kind of played out, these really bright reds and that this movie is the same. So it's kind of hard to look at. I think that's the point. Like it's even the set design is uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, they did a great job with this movie. And I, you know, like I saying, it's not a movie that I'm going to go back and revisit very much, but it's definitely a classic of this era. I think 10, 15 years from now, people will still be talking about this movie. And it'll be receiving like 8K ultimate editions and shit like that. But yeah, I mean, it does have aspects of Wicker Man, but in other ways, like I love the Wicker Man and everything, but this is like more, it hits you harder than the Wicker Man. Like it leaves a more lasting impression, I think.
Well, it's definitely more graphic and fucking just difficult to watch. Like I didn't have trouble watching the Wicker Man. But I can't imagine trying to sit through that one again. I really can't.
Right. There is actually a director's cut of this that's out in 4K. And I come a hair of watching it again, but I just did. I just couldn't bring myself. And the inside artwork on this, which I don't want to show it in great detail or anything. It's very,
yeah,
very
that
weird.
Seems right. Yeah.
And I definitely can't show that. Let's see. Give you an idea there of some of the weird shit that's, yeah. But they came out with this one. A24 still has this, which I'm sure it'll have multiple editions eventually, but I thought this one was pretty cool.
So I can see, I guess, why some people would not like this movie. Very long, very kind of slow, and there's not, how do you say it? It's not like a slasher, and it doesn't really fit a genre per se. So I don't,
yeah, it's not a mainstream movie.
No.
Which I'm surprised that this was out in any movie theater. Definitely is not going to be a nationwide top deal at all.
No.
It's just some of the stuff that was in it. The lead in it, Florence Pugh, she does a great job. And I think the boy in it that was her boyfriend, he was put in some weird fucking situations. And I have mad respect for that guy. As an actor, because I couldn't think of anything more difficult to film than some of the stuff that they asked him to do.
Yeah. I mean, can you really imagine that? Push on my ass. Come on. No.
Come on, you old elderly woman, push my butt and stare at me and shit. I don't know. But yeah. Midsummer. Yeah. I'm glad you finally checked it out. Uncle Bill. I think it debuted at like Sundance 2019. So it's right at almost a little bit over 2 years old from when it was released initially.
I'm not sure though. Would you? You probably should be careful as to who you recommend this movie to. I'll say that. Like, this is a movie probably for people that are either really open-minded or really like knowledgeable in horror films. because I can't. Some of this shit in here, no, not for the squeamish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would say horror fans over the age of 30 would probably be more likely to enjoy this. If you grew up watching the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake and Love and Rob Zombie's Halloween and just horrible pieces of shit like that and never have went on to, like, if you didn't like The Wicker Man, or, I mean, I don't even know what to say, but anything that is not almost like bubblegum, easy to digest, you know, you probably wouldn't be a fan of this.
Yeah.
Which bubblegum is probably not easy to digest, I don't think, but you know what I mean.
I get it. Yeah, it's a metaphor, I get it.
So, yeah, that is Midsommar. Ari Aster, young filmmaker. I think he's just a little bit over 30 years old, 30, 32, 33 years old. So that's kind of impressive, really.
They're kind of calling him like one of the in a trilogy of three guys that are revolutionizing horror. Like, we're going through some sort of a new revolution. It's him, that Eggers guy, and Jordan Peele. They're saying are the three that I guess would be like Carpenter, Craven, and Hooper now. Yeah.
So Robert Eggers, since you mentioned him, we'll go into The Witch next. How about that?
Yeah.
Which
I'm curious to see what you thought about this.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really know much about this movie. It is The Witch, a New England folktale, is technically what it was called. And I guess it was just shortened to The Witch. 2015. I didn't realize that movie was that old. It's already 6 years old. So it starts out like it's around the 1600s, I think, right? 1630, something like that.
Yeah.
So just a few years before the Salem witch trials happened. And I think a lot of the aspects of this movie was based on real events or stuff from around that time period. So, family of, what is it? It's twins, a set of twins, mom and dad, and an older daughter, and an older brother. So it's four kids, two adults in the movie. They are banished from the local township. I think initially it was the father that they had blamed for, like, I guess this was around the time too when Satanism and witchcraft and stuff like that was blamed for everything. So it's almost like Eastern Kentucky in 2021.
Yeah, there's a good parallel there.
So there's also a young, like a newborn baby in starting off early. So they've got some weird fucking names in this movie too, which I had to write them down or I'd never remember them. Thomason is the older daughter, right? Which is played by Anya Taylor-Joy. Sounds like she's going to run for Congress. So she, like, this is around the time frame of like Little House on the Prairie or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Where,
yeah,
it's just they're farming. That's all they can do. There's nothing else. This is the freaking 1600s. There's no jobs. You know, farming is their life or whatever. And she's out in the woods, and out of nowhere, that baby is just taken. Right. So this brings like the mother into, you know, she kind of slowly starts going a little nuts, of course, looking for the baby and everything. The guy that plays the dad in it does a really good job. I think he's a chain smoker or something. He's got the deepest, raspiest freaking voice I've ever heard.
He does. And
also in this movie too, the accents that the actors have, I'm not recognizing exactly what that, I mean, it's almost like a weird mixture or a variant of like Irish accent or something. You can't understand them a whole lot, what they're saying. At least I couldn't.
Yeah. And they actually went back to that time period and reviewed transcripts of what people, like how they talked and what words that they used and things like that in that period. And that's how they came to this, to that kind of dialect or whatever that is.
Right. So, you know, I think the mother and the father both are blaming the occult or a witch. I think that was kind of one of the legends of the time as well. If something went missing, they always blamed the witch or witches or, you know, the occult. I don't know if the occult was even a thing then, but you know what I'm saying? So, there's another scene as the movie goes along where the older brother Caleb and Thomason go searching for food. And they get separated. And the boy Caleb is also missing for a while and is found, but he has been witched, is what they said. Right. So then, I mean, just various things start going on with his family. And you do see some brief glimpses, I guess, of the witches. Like there's a sexy witch. There's an old hag witch with saggy, you know, wet paper sack titties. And then like, you know, there's a little bit of a twist towards the end as well. It's another one kind of, I mean, it's not as long as Midsommar, but it's just a slower buildup to ultimately what happens at the end of the movie. And I didn't love it, but I really did enjoy it. I mean, I thought it was something different. It was, as far as the horror genre goes, there's not a whole lot of movies that's like this in particular. It's a lower budget movie, but man, you can't freaking tell. Like he does such a great job. And I had heard that they're using, when they shot the movie, they used a lot of natural light. They used what they had there to shoot the movie. So I've got the budget somewhere here. A lot of people are a fan of Black Phillip as well, who's in it. which, you know, I mean, anybody that's, if you're a fan of Slayer or any of those damn death metal bands, you know that goats and Satanism go hand in hand. And there's no difference here.
Yeah, there's an amazing scene either. In the film with Black Phillip too. I'm just like watching it going, oh God.
It's just so wild. $4 million budget, man. That's insane.
That's the thing. Okay, so I watched this movie pretty much when it came out, like not too long after it came out. And it was like nothing at all else that was out or had been out for, I don't even know how many years at that time when it came out too. And it just took everybody by surprise. Like nobody knew, you know, that guy even existed at that time. And he came out with this movie, and the dialect and the tone and the pacing of it. Like there's nothing else like that going on. You know, I think that the closest thing would be the Ari Aster stuff to what that is now too, anyway.
And there's a lot of blaming going on in the movie too, like even amongst the family, like who is the witch in the family or whatever else. And then there's a scene too where, you know, the Caleb character is like dying, he's close to death or whatever, and they all get down to say the Lord's Prayer, right? And then that's when I don't want to give it away, the shit hits the fan because a witch, that's the legend, I guess, the witch cannot speak the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I just thought this was different. Nothing's like it. There's like we compared Midsommar similar to The Wicker Man. There is nothing like The Witch that I've seen.
No. And I think that was the best part about the movie to me is Like, you were really transported into this world. Like, there is nothing in this movie that makes you, that takes you out of the movie, that makes you feel like that you're not in that time period, that this shit is not going on. Like, everything, it seems like you're just in a different fucking world throughout the whole movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. Like I said, it's probably not one that I would go back and revisit a whole lot, but it's different. I mean, it, that's the thing. And evidently the story is this movie scared Stephen King. So what does that tell you?
Yeah, I mean, I can see it scared me when I first watched it. Just a lot of the stuff in it with kids and stuff, you're just like, God damn, that's, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I would recommend it. I would recommend both of the movies so far that we talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I recommend, definitely recommend this. And there's not a whole lot of good, like, witch movies. Well, I mean, any time in the last, what, 15, 20 years, unless it's something that I'm completely forgetting about. But, I mean, you know, that's a subgenre within the horror genre that isn't talked about quite a bit. And I think that the interesting thing about it is, too, is the witches throughout the movie are not really seen very much at all. I mean, there's kind of hints at them here and there. And I think that that works a lot better than just showing, you know, the typical, you know.
Yeah, they took a much better approach, the Blair Witch approach, which is just you sense that things are there, and the way that the camera moves, you sense it's there, but you never really can figure out exactly what's going on, which if it's a better way to do that kind of movie, it really is.
Yeah. And you were saying too, that, you know, the script, even like the words and all that, it was written around the English that was available in the 1600s.
Yes.
Which that would be very, very freaking difficult to do as well. So,
but I think that's the thing that makes it work so much, is because, like, if you're making a movie like that, but you have people speaking like modern dialect, then you really are, you're watching like a modern interpretation. But this feels like you're watching like a documentary. Of what's going on. Like, if they can have film cameras in the 1600s.
And also, this DVD, too, like, I think this is like $5 pretty much everywhere you go online. Like, I don't know why it's so cheap. Did they ever do a 4K of this? I could imagine how killer that would look in 4K, but I don't think they did.
I don't think so. I don't remember seeing that, but I would buy it.
Yeah.
Because the design of the movie is great, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was very, very impressed with just the quality of it as well. Especially, it's a $4 million budget movie, and it looks like something that, you know, I mean, like a major Hollywood studio would get out. It looked great.
So, I'm not sure what the budget either of The Lighthouse was. It's probably a lot higher because you had fucking Twilight Dude in it, but it looked like it was about a $60, $70 million film too.
Yeah, I mean, that one I think is, I don't know if there's a, is that, is there horror in that one? I don't know a whole lot about
it. Oh, yeah, it's a horror film. I mean, I don't know. It's another one that's like really difficult to classify, but definitely at the end, it is a horror film. Yeah.
So, yeah, that is The Witch. You know that on the, I guess that's Old English, right? The Old English does not have the letter W in it. I think that was what they told us back in the day. So it's Zivich. It's two V's.
Oh.
Yeah.
So now we'll move on to the one that's probably the absolute hardest to fucking explain and interpret. I don't know. You know, just like, to give a linear kind of narrative to this is going to be really hard, but which is Hereditary, Ari Aster's first film, which starts out.
I think this one was a little bit more mainstream. If I'm not mistaken, this one was out in the movie theaters.
I mean, I remember this one getting a lot more press than Midsommar did. I'll put it that way. Like, I'm fairly certain that more people knew about this one than they did that one. So, basically starts out, like, with the premise of this matriarch dies, and there's Annie, who is the the daughter is getting everything arranged for the funeral, and she's got a daughter and a son and a husband, and she is a miniature set designer. I believe that's her occupation in the film. Like, literally, she's painting like this little tiny house thing throughout the whole film. And so, just passed away, and it's really hit her and her daughter the hardest. And from some of the dialogue, you get the impression that the grandmother or what have you raised, or at least helped raise, the daughter throughout the course of her life. And that comes back later on in the film. But after the funeral, these weird things start to happen throughout the house. Like, daughter starts seeing kind of visions of her, and there's these kind of weird goings on and noises and happenings and things like that. And the middle of the movie is the hardest for me to explain, when it really like gets like starts to ratchet up. So without giving anything away, there's a series of events that happen that make things significantly worse. I'll put it that way, for Annie. And she slowly starts to kind of descend into this madness. And at the same time, there's shit going on in the house that you can't really tell if it's stuff that's going on in their own minds, or if it's stuff that's actually like going on through this legacy of what's happened in the house, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially throughout the whole movie is Toni Collette's just dissension into fucking insanity.
Yeah.
One thing after another happens to her family. You know, there's the holy shit moment in this movie as well, which I don't want to give it away, but it, unless you've read any spoilers or anything like that, you're going to be like, what in the fuck?
The best part about it too, the most effective part about it, is that it comes out of absolute nowhere.
Right.
Like, within 20 minutes of the movie, and you don't, I mean, there's no way you could see it coming.
Well, fuck it. Let's talk about it. Spoiler alert. If anybody hasn't fucking seen this, just fucking fast forward it a couple minutes.
It's hard to talk about these movies without doing this. I mean, it really is.
Yeah. So, the brother, what was it? The brother's name? I can't remember.
I want to say it was Tommy or Timmy or some shit. Like,
let's just say little Timmy. Timmy takes his daughter, Charlie. I do remember her name was Charlie, to a party, right? And she ends up eating something. I don't remember exactly what it was at the party that causes her, I guess, esophagus or whatever to swell up and she can't breathe. So he's like rushing around, getting in his vehicle, going to take her to the ER, try to get somebody to help her, you know, or whatever. And then she can't breathe. She can't breathe or whatever. So she, for some reason, rolls a window down and tries to stick her head out to get some air. And I think he swerves from hitting like a dog or a deer or something like that. And her head fucking, it just rips her fucking head off when she hits like a telephone pole. And the kid just keeps driving. Like, that's what, but at the same time, like, okay. I mean, that almost, that's almost some believability, because a kid would probably do something completely off like that.
Well, that was probably the hardest part for me to watch in this whole movie, really. Well, there's two hard parts to watch, but that was one of them. Was, so he drives home and just leaves the fucking car out there and goes to bed and doesn't say anything. And his mom wakes up, goes out to use the car, and finds that out there. That whole scene, man, you're just like, Jesus Christ. Like, I can't believe that.
Well, you know. And then you get like a pan shot too of the son, with you know, as the sun is coming up or whatever, with bugs and all this shit all over that girl's severed head on the highway.
Yeah, that's the juxtaposition between her finding the body, and then, you know, it shows you at the same time the head.
Yeah.
It's brutal to watch that, by the way.
Something else that Ari Aster does in movies too is he always tries to do, you know, just basic prosthetic effects. So he does everything on screen instead of, you know, CGI in it later, which I think is very effective, especially with what they can do now with, you know, just basic makeup effects and prosthetics and stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot more effective than anything that you'll see with digital effects, because it doesn't ever take you out of the movie. And that's one thing I'll say about that guy. Like, he refuses to let up on you in any way in either one of these movies. He's just like, you know, you're fucked. You won't be the same.
Just some of the chaos that goes on in the last 10 minutes of this movie, too, is very up there with, like, The Exorcist, like, where you're just at, you're like at a 10 for a, you're like, what in the fuck is going on, you know, go on here. And none of his movies so far have had a happy ending either, Uncle Bill.
No, that's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can appreciate that as well. So, but yeah, I mean, out of the two movies, which one, just out of curiosity, Hereditary versus Midsommar, which one kind of did you like more, you think?
I think just, and this is my only thought about, like, why this would be, I think it was probably Toni Collette's performance that would lead me to like Hereditary more. They're just completely different movies, though. Like, and they're both grueling and amazing in their own ways, but I think that would probably be the deciding factor.
Right.
Like, everything she does really seems genuine throughout that movie. Like, there's never a part in it where you don't believe.
I think I had heard a story too where she had told her agent that she was like, I'm going to do some comedies and shit. I'm done with this dramatic, you know, just hard movies like this or whatever. And then somehow she had gotten a copy of the script and pretty much said, I'm doing this movie. Right. So she was that impressed with it. And I thought, like I said, I mean, I think she did and you were saying too, she did such a great job in this movie too. I almost think she should have been nominated for some kind of, you know, I don't know if the Academy would, they don't really do horror movies there, but I mean, if anybody ever deserved a nomination in a horror movie, it was her, I would think.
There's so many scenes in it where you're just like, she is just incredibly hard to watch. Like the scene afterwards, after she finds the head and everything, or the body and everything, and she's just screaming in his arms, and there's like a 5-minute scene of her just like going crazy. And it's just like, sitting there watching it thinking, who could really do this? Like, if somebody told you, you know, just express grief in the most, you know, powerful way that you can for 5 minutes, like, and you pull it off like that, like, that's pretty amazing. Like, I think,
yeah, no doubt. I mean, great job in this. And the movie, again, though, like, much like Midsommar, it's a very slow burn. I mean, this is a long movie as well.
Yeah.
So it's not for everybody. And I think, and I told you too, I was like, definitely do not watch this with any kids.
Yeah, which I didn't. I didn't even attempt to watch it like anytime during the day. I'll put it that way.
Because, like, there's a couple of scenes in this that would leave a lasting impression on kids for sure. Not in a good way.
Well, honestly, like, it's always the smaller things that freak me out about these movies. Like, I never really get freaked out by the big gags, like the fucking head explosions and, yep, you know. But it's the scenes, like, where, you know, she's crawling on the fucking ceiling. And it's shit like that where you're just like, that is just... And the scene, honestly, too, there's a scene where she's... I love when a director does this too, just like out of nowhere, you know, you're not expecting it. usually a movie follows a rhythm where it's like beginning is the setup and kind of like, you know, kind of get going in the exposition and stuff. And then, you know, things start to build up to wherever it's going to. And then there's a payoff at the end. That's usually how a movie goes. But like in this one, she's going through some of the old stuff that she has in the house and things like that, and in the attic or something. And she just turns and looks, and like the mother's like standing like right there smiling at her. Like, well, that's within like the first 10 minutes of the movie or something. And I'm just like, Jesus, that's creepy as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, I especially like, this was what year was this one? 2018, I think.
Yeah.
So at this point in time, he was like in his like 30 years old, 31 years old or whatever. Man, like, and I know he's one of those guys too, that's much like, you know, a lot of the filmmakers that we watched back in the day started out with short films, and he's got all kinds of really intriguing and interesting short movies that's on YouTube that you can check out. But man, like, as far overall though, I think that this guy Ari Aster is like, he is almost the savior for horror films from this point on, because I think the next one he's doing is a horror comedy in a way, so he's changing it up a little bit. But nobody knows a whole lot about the movie. I think it Joaquin Phoenix is starring in it. But not much is known about it. I did hear it was a horror comedy.
Yeah, I'm not even sure how, like, you classify that guy either. Like, I'm sitting here thinking about it, and it's like, if you had to put him in a category of like Carpenter, Craven, or Hooper, I guess he would fit more in with like fucking Hooper than anybody else of those three. Like, if you're judging like based on a certain style, because he just is relentless with the tones of the movies and yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he's definitely different. I mean, just to take that, and I think that old school horror fans, that's what I was saying, these movies for 30 and older, it's just a fresh, it's a fresh of breath air. It's a
fresh breath air, baby.
Ari Aster put a line in the sand, if you will. And he told
lines.
All those dick licking assholes that are making them remakes and shit, don't cross this line, baby, because I'm going to make some good shit. Put you all out of business.
I think, honest to God, though, that him and Eggers are the only two people that were really trying to make shocking new horror films in a sea of shit that's just like remakes and sequels and reboots and reimaginings and fucking 80s slasher films. You know, that's another thing too that don't really talk about enough. Like, there was a whole time period there, probably like 2015, somewhere, where people were just remaking, like, they weren't really remaking, they were just making like slasher films from the 80s and putting like newer names on them and newer kind of, you know, spins on them. But it was the same kind of thing. And they just both said, fuck all that. Like, we're going to make the strangest, most disturbing series of films that you've seen. And it really is. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you like,
you got to think there for a long time, especially during the time frame when we were going and seeing pretty much everything in the movie theater. Very few movies even attempted the unsettling slow build type movies like this. For one thing, they're probably very, very difficult to do. Another thing, a lot of the payoffs and stuff that are in these movies like this, studios at that point in time, there's no way that they were going to, I mean, I think the Aster movies, a lot of stuff is in Midsummer. No way they would include that in a, you know, in a mainstream movie. But hopefully, you know, with things that are changing with COVID and all that, once these theaters and stuff get back open, and they see that, you know, Midsummer is just kicking ass with rentals and people streaming it and everything else. And these type of movies hopefully will have like more of a mainstream resurgence in some way, because let's be honest. I mean, the horror genre for the past at least 10 years or so, it's stale, man, like overall. And the mainstream stuff is pretty much non-existent. There's nothing freaking coming out really, you know, all this bullshit.
I think they really almost killed it with all the shit they did from like you were saying, about 2005 to 2000. I don't know, like when we 2000, just say 12 or 13 or something like that, because like they had all the Saw films coming out, and they had the Hostels, and they had the fucking, you know, all the remakes, and that was when all that stuff was like at its height. And they almost killed the entire thing, really. Well, you can't really kill it, but you know what I mean? Like, it just sends it underground for a while because they just overload it. I've tried to watch some of those movies again, just some of the remakes. Like, let's say I try Black Christmas and fucking, you know, some of those like Prom Nights. That's the worst shit you'll ever see. Just completely like soulless and devoid of any kind of entertainment value whatsoever. And just, you knew it was being made for money, and it looks like it was being made for money. Nobody looks like they're interested. The directors are not interested. They're not making decent film. What, they have no interest in it, like to make a decent film, especially them fucking Texas Chainsaw movies. Like, just everything in those movies is the most sloppy, generic shit, like, to put in a movie. Just for like jump scares and effects and things like that. It's awful. But so to see somebody now, like either one of those guys, and you should really watch The Lighthouse, by the way, because it's so fucking, it may be of those four movies, the most insane of any of those four movies. So, I mean, but between those four movies, though, that's kind of like the new, I don't want to call it a revolution. I don't know what you call it, but it's like a
renaissance.
Renaissance. That's a good word. Yeah. That's the thing.
I'm a wordsmith.
You really don't know you're in the middle of that shit when you are, because it just seems like it's kind of organic. Like, you know, when people are making movies like that, like, you don't realize how genius it is until years later. Like Carpenter, I'm sure in the 80s people didn't fucking think Carpenter was making all these seminal films until like probably the 90s they started to realize that. But
and then by then he was making Escape from LA,
exactly, and Ghosts of Mars and shit.
Yeah,
so but I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, eventually people are going to be like, the mainstream public is going to be like, okay, these guys were making like these amazing films at this time.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I almost think that if you're just a film fan, movies like Midsommar, The Witch, Hereditary, those are just well-made movies. So, I mean, that was, I was telling you, my mother-in-law enjoyed, you know, Midsommar because, I mean, I think honestly, because it was so well-made and so just intriguing, beautiful to look at, but at the same time, there was some evil going on there that you just didn't know exactly what was what. And then the shit hit the fan, and then you were like glued in there for the rest of the hour, 2 hour plus. So
I think that may be the difference from those two movies too. Like in Hereditary, you're kind of, the thing that keeps you glued to that is her performance. And in Midsommar, the thing that keeps you glued to it is like just the place itself and the cult and like what's going to happen with all that too. Like
it's, and just the craziness that's going on in such a beautiful, you know, atmosphere. It's just very weird.
Yeah.
So can you imagine watching that movie, Hiring a Coyote, on like something?
Here's what I was thinking.
I don't think I'd be able to survive it.
Honest to God. Like, I was seriously sitting here thinking, if there's one thing I would not want to do, it would be watch The Lighthouse High. Because you'll have a fucking nervous breakdown, man. Like, he'll be fucking said, oh, you'll be in a corner somewhere.
I remember watching the preview for that on Vudu or something like that. And it is, it's very weird looking. I'll give it that. Like, I don't know how they filmed it or whatever, but very odd.
Well, the guy, the Eggers guy was talking about it. I've watched a couple of interviews with him, and he basically like never wanted to go back to that set again. And never, I think he had some sort of breakdown due to filming it. And mostly because of the actors, which, I mean, if I had to work with fucking Robert Pattinson, I'd probably have a breakdown too. But yeah, apparently like it was really draining.
Well, William Dafoe's in that as well, right? He's not the most sane character. No, either.
Both of them together probably about killed him.
Yeah. But yeah, these, I'm really enjoying these patron requested reviews. So, I mean, we're doing these for the Baller and Shot Callers here. Both of those are filled up now, Uncle Bill.
No.
So we'll get two more for this month coming, and who knows what they'll pick. A lot of this stuff, I think it's fun because, what was it? It was a good two and a half years there. I don't think either one of us was watching a whole lot of stuff. No. So we kind of get to catch up on, well, this episode, especially on the movies that we didn't watch during that time frame. And The Witch was, that was the only one that I'd never seen up until, you know, a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, I'm really intrigued on what's next.
Me too. And like you said, like at least like we don't have to try to search things out. People giving us these kind of requests and things like Hereditary, which is a movie that's always kind of in your peripheral. Like, at least it was for me. Like, I'd never seen it, but I've always heard about it and probably should have watched it. And Midsommar being the same way, and The Witch and all these movies, like, yeah, it gives you a reason to go ahead and watch these movies, which, you know, at least I know that they're going to be good.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, or even like, you know, last month, laughably shitty, like The Fanatic. That was fun.
You know what's weird about that movie? That, like, I know it's a shitty movie, but I kind of want to watch it again. I don't know why, but there's something about that movie that, even though it's god awful, like it's entertaining somehow or another.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's fun. It's fun to get recommended these movies, that a lot of which we probably, like Incident in a Ghostland, we would have probably never, ever watched that.
No.
And that one was great as well. I mean, it was kind of more obscure, but yeah, it's a lot of fun doing these, and hopefully we can continue on doing this for a while. If you're interested, you can go to deadpitonpatreon.com. Which we have that domain.
Oh.
Dead Pit Inc. has purchased it. Uncle Bill.
That's great.
It's a lot easier to just say deadpitonpatreon.com and it takes you there. Which there's a lot of really good shit that we've got up on there. And I sent you one thing that I want to put up some fun stuff every once in a while too. Like there's an app that we used to use called Voxer. Like that was a big thing. It's like a walkie talkie thing for smartphones back in the day. And I stumbled across this clip of, I was drunk or something. I don't know. I was off. You listened to it, didn't you?
I did. Yeah.
So I think it starts off with me and Dana, and then you get T-shirt Joe when you're in there briefly. And it's just hilarious. Like that's one that's going to be up there. More than likely by the time everybody listens to this. And I think we've got close to 100 Dead Pit shows. We've got about 60 midweek shows and almost 40 audio commentaries on there already.
Jesus. Yeah, like I could say a lot of shit. Stuff. Here's the thing though, there's so much stuff like that we did that I don't even remember. Like the Voxer thing, I mean, I vaguely remember that when I saw it, but I would have had no idea, You know, and the stuff with the MWO and all that stuff. Like, yeah.
And another thing that it'll be up probably by Thursday of this week. What day is it? Thursday is the 11th, right? We did a commentary for My Bloody Valentine. So I'm going to put that up before Valentine's Day. And that hasn't, I was told that we did put that up for a show, but it was only up for like a week. And that was like almost 10 years ago. And it's never been put back up. I don't even remember doing it.
I don't either, man. You could have knocked me over, like,
yeah,
by saying that we done that.
So,
but speaking of which, look here.
What you got? Oh, shit.
I'm buying all kinds of stupid shit again. Look here. I'm wasting money.
Are you going to open it up or leave it in a box?
Motherfucker, you know you don't open these up. What if I have to sell it?
Some people do. Hey, did you see that the Scream Factory sale right now that they have the Slumber Party Massacre steelbook with the figure for $30?
I know, man. And they had the this is what pissed me off. They had the fucking Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, Eric Freeman for like $30 or something too, the deluxe edition of that figure, which I already bought. So back when it was $60, they'll probably have this shit in about a year.
I don't know. I mean, I think that's more sought after. Like, I don't know if anybody ever asked for like a fucking figure for the guy from Slumber Party Massacre. That's the only one that I'm really surprised that they actually made, because that's even obscure for Scream Factory.
Now here is an obscure figure. That's fucking.
Oh, it's a Dave Chappelle figure. Yeah.
It's Frank from the They Live. Look at that.
Now, see, I like They Live and everything, but that will be another one that I would see that one being on sale at some point too.
It's already sold out.
Oh, did they already sell it out?
Yeah.
The figure's already gone? Really?
Well, the figure came with, the figure might be still available. I shouldn't say that. But the ultimate package or whatever thing is sold out, that's what I got the figure with. It came with the vinyl.
But yeah, I wouldn't imagine, because that's like, why couldn't they do a Kurt Russell figure?
That's a good fucking question. Like, there has to be some sort of licensing thing
probably
with him, because like, they did a Snake Plissken figure for Movie Maniacs and NECA and all that shit. So I know they'd be able to do something. But also got the Roddy Piper figure somewhere. But have you seen that yet? That's actually probably the best one.
No, I haven't seen that one, I don't think.
Well, while I'm playing with my toys.
Hot Rod! I don't have anything to show off.
This is pretty goddamn amazing, actually.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. See, I would think that getting the rights to do a Piper figure would be more difficult than Kurt Russell.
I would think so, too.
The wrestling shit.
But he's got like a different face, different head.
I'm waiting on the NECA Deluxe Sam Hill figure.
You'd be waiting a long time, I'd say. Damn. They really are coming out with some silly shit, but I'm buying all of it, so I can't really say anything.
Yeah, you're just going to stockpile it.
I don't have anywhere to put it anymore, but that's why I'm starting to hang figures up.
Like, I'm stockpiling those Friday the 13th sets, hoping they go out of print.
Yeah, like you're stockpiling. Oh, shit. Come on.
I got four of them now, motherfucker. They'll probably stay in print forever.
That'd be hilarious.
Be 4 years from now, they'll still be.
But on a serious note, though, about that shit that I got down there, if you haven't, I don't know if you can now, but like the 4K fucking release of They Live, the packaging and shit for that is fucking amazing. Like
you got the deluxe with the soundtrack or something, right?
Yeah. And they've got one of Prince of Darkness that you sent that looks about the same, but the packaging, it comes in as like a little cigar box thing and you open it up and it's got the vinyl on top of that. And then you open that up, take that off, and it's got the actual 4K. And I don't know, man. Like, that's probably the best design I've seen for something like that.
I do know that that Amazon sale they've got right now does include, I guess, just the standard 4Ks in that. So it's buy two, get one free. And I think they're like $24 a piece or something like that. So there's a lot of cool stuff on that Amazon. Well, Amazon and Target both have the...
I don't think I can buy two. Like, man, I don't even want to talk about it. Like, I ended up buying like three more than fucking things. Like, from the
I thought seriously about getting the they got the Blue Underground 4Ks as well in that set too.
Yeah,
in that sale. So, a lot of stuff to think about.
We really have a sickness.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap the show up. Do you have anything else you want to mention on here? Any other topics you want to bring up or anything? I mean, we've kind of talked about these movies. I don't know anything else we can say other than they're all three of them are badass. And if you haven't checked them out, you should definitely purchase them or rent them or whatever you do.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything other than just watch the Lighthouse.
And I'll have to get that. One out? I would buy that in 4K just because I know that it would look freaking killer, but I don't know if it's out in 4K.
I honestly don't know.
No. Hereditary's out in 4K.
Yeah, I did see that one out. Like,
yeah.
That, yeah.
So, all right. Well,
I'm just looking forward to the next batch of shit. If it's halfway as crazy as this was, it's going to be a good night.
Yep. So we've got both Ballers and Shot Callers are back. Full steam ahead, sold out.
Oh.
So until the next show, next go around, which we should do a live stream with somebody. Next time we do one, get somebody else on there. Like we can get maybe we can talk Felcher and Don May in the doing a show at the same time.
That would be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll figure something out, but, appreciate you joining me on here, Uncle Bill, and we will have to do it again soon.
I'll tell you what we should do. Let's get, Robert Eggers and Ari Aster on here at the same fucking time. Wouldn't that be killer? Talk about this shit. Come on.
I think what we should do for a live stream, maybe as a special,
right,
is call Eli Roth again.
That's also a good idea.
Hop it up. He probably just won't answer it or whatever, even if it's still his number.
What if he did fucking answer, though? Well, we'd probably get to say one thing and then he'd hang up. So wouldn't
no, I would just lie to him. Like I would say, hey, is this Eli? We were told to give you a call. You want to do an interview with us?
That'd be so killer.
And he would be like, yeah, who gave you my number? And I would say, Quentin. He said that.
Quentin.
It's our good pal, Quentin. Quentin T, what we call him.
Oh, fuck.
So.
Yeah.
I just think it'd be funnier than fuck. I would totally do that. Because you know he wouldn't fucking talk to us anyway, but.
Be like, buddy, we got your number from Adam Green. He said it wasn't no big deal.
Yeah, Adam Green, when he was getting his dog shaved that day, you know, on the strip there, you know, he gave us your number. But, yeah, until next time, I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I'm Uncle Bill.
And you can check everything out. It's at deadpitonpatreon.com or deadpit.com.